Good news, one of your favorite podcasts is back, folks. It's Election Profit Makers, your guide to winning and losing money on political outcomes and current events. No comedy bits this week. There's too much news to get to, and the biggest headline of them all is that Kid Midas's friend Long John Silver is once again actively trading on predictit.org. What do they say in the poem? Kalu Kalay, oh fraptious day. They say something like that. Do you know what I'm talking about? The Jabberwock?
No. Yeah.
Beware the Jabberwock, my son. My warple blade goes flicker, flack, snicker, snack. We're going to get that dragon and stab it right in the back. McDonald's hamburgers for everyone straight out of the sack. It's the same man who wrote Alice in Wonderland. And we're in a wonderland of predicted activity because John Kimball has rediscovered his love for something called negative risk. John, with all the news that's going on, we're just in a swirl of bad news everywhere, but this is one bright spot. So let us know how your week has been when it comes to trading on predictit.org.
Well, it's been great because, you know, Predictit has changed up some markets. They've added some new candidates to the GOP vice presidential market. They added J.D. Vance. And he immediately skyrocketed to 16 cents. And just this morning, they added a couple more, our friend Marco Rubio and Governor Burgum out of the state of North Dakota has been added as well.
He is currently trading in second place just behind Tim Scott, who holds steady at 22 cents. We have Doug Burgum at 18 cents, J.D. Vance at 12 cents. You might be wondering what all happened to old Christy Gnome. I can't believe this. She's down to 3 cents. Come on, guys.
Yeah.
It was just one dog. I've never seen a collapse like this.
So see, when they add somebody new, everybody goes down a little bit. So this is your opportunity. The second they add someone new, you better grab some negative risk on these others because they're all about to drop a few cents to even it out to, you know, 100%.
And remind us all for the 40th or 41st time, what exactly is negative risk?
Oh, negative risk. You know, everybody has trouble explaining it. You know, the founder of Predictit, John Aristotle, he doesn't even like to describe what it is. But it is a way where you buy no on every contract. But if you are able to buy at a certain price, you can put yourself in a position where you will not lose.
It is a can't lose opportunity.
That's right. And I have been able to actually accomplish it. At this point, my worst case scenario is if Gnome wins.
If Trump picks Gnome as his 2024 VP running mate,
I will make $71.94.
That's the worst case scenario.
That is the worst case scenario. I will make money on no matter which one of these candidates it is. And if it is a candidate other than someone on this list, then I will, at the moment, make $700. And that is $700 potentially on an investment of negative $71.
And your investment is technically negative because you will not lose money?
It's negative because they have already given me that $71 because they can see that there's just no risk at all. So they go ahead and credit you that money.
No risk at all.
No risk at all. I mean, the only risk is that Predictit goes out of business and steals your money. But assuming that doesn't happen, there is no risk. So I'm loving it. I'm doing great. I'm back in the game. I've been spending a lot of time doing it. And, you know, these VP markets, as they keep adding more and more candidates, the negative risk just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And in the end, you can end up winning, you know, a couple thousand bucks, maybe.
There are a lot of people. There are a lot of brackets, I'll say, in the VP market. Why don't I read them all from top to bottom, just for fun? Tim Scott, Doug Burgum, J.D. Vance, Elise Stefanik. And I, you know what? I still have 100 shares of Elise Stefanik. I'm starting to think she's going to be the one. But let's keep going. Marco Rubio, Tulsi Gabbard, Byron Donalds, Vivek Ramaswamy. Remember him? I forgot all about him. Boy, he fell off.
Yeah, I got him at a really good price.
Really?
Yeah, I think I got him
when he was up in like the high teens.
Vivek Ramaswamy is such a famous rapper. I want him to weigh in on the Kendrick Lamar Drake rap battle that's going on this week and contributing.
I want you to weigh in on that.
Contributing
actually.
To the sense of catastrophe across our international news landscape. Sarah H. Sanders, Kristi Noem, Ron DeSantis, Nikki Haley, Carrie Lake, Mike Pompeo, Marsha Blackburn, Glenn Youngkin, Robert Kennedy Jr., Kim Reynolds, Marjorie Taylor Greene, holding steady at 1 cent. Chris Sununu, Mike Pence, and Henry McMaster. How many names is that? 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, 18, 20, 22. Donald Trump is truly spoiled for choice when it comes to choosing his vice president.
Right. And I can't remember what it ended up being last time for him, but it was huge. You know, you had everybody on there.
Right.
Anytime there was any rumor of anyone, Predict It would add them. They have not done that this time.
Predict It used to be sort of loosey-goosey, folks, for people who don't remember the previous
election
cycles.
Yeah, so every name would
cycles.
Get on there, and they may never trade more than 1 cent, but you could just get negative risk across the board buying, you know, the opposite side of 1 cent, which is 99 cents, and then it would really add up. But J.D. Vance has been rumored as a VP since March, and he wasn't added till this week. Or last week.
Predict It used to be like, will Trump look like a loaf of bread this week? And they would add a market. They would just have markets for everything.
Yeah.
But now they're a little more skittish. J.D. Vance. All right. So let's talk about Ohio's golden hillbilly. The hillbilly with the head of gold. Will Trump pick J.D. Vance? I suppose that would help him in Ohio, right?
Yeah, which I don't know. I don't think he needs any help in Ohio.
Okay. So then I don't think he'll pick him. He needs help with women more than he needs help with Ohio, right?
Yeah.
On the other hand,
Don Jr. likes him for some reason.
Don Jr. and J.D. Vance have a real bromance going on. Isn't that right?
Yeah.
They like to hang out. It's probably because they're both incredibly tough. They're just like the kind of guys who are just like cool and like, God, I would love to. You know, now that I think about it, now that I set my mind to a ponder in that, I would love to be a fly on the wall when J.D. Vance and Donald Trump Jr. socialize. What is that like for both of them? What do you think J.D. Vance, you know how sometimes when you socialize with somebody, especially if you don't know them well, you are self-conscious and you can have a double consciousness going where you have your outward-facing interaction with this person, but then you're kind of monitoring it in the back of your head, like, do they like me or is this going well or something like that? I want readouts from both of those guys' back of the mind analysis of their interaction. Like J.D. Vance is like, is this going well? Is he going to report back to his father that I'm a cool guy? Or this guy is such a fucking idiot. What have I done? I went to an Ivy League college. Why am I talking about duck hunting with this fucking caveman? Or Donald Trump Jr. is like, does this guy think I'm smart? I hope he thinks I'm smart. I read back issues of the London Review of Books prepping for this encounter with J.D. Vance.
You think he did?
Yeah. Or is he like, God damn, this guy's really getting it. He's really cool. And he thinks I'm cool. This is terrific. What I would like access to is the deeply considered and extensive personal diaries, which I know they both keep, of J.D. Vance and Donald Trump. And I want the entries for the nights after they've spent time in each other's company.
And this would help you with your intel.
Masturbating.
Trading on Predict It.
No, just jacking it. Jacking my cock off. Moving on.
So Doug Burgum, what are your thoughts about him?
I have no idea who this dude is. None whatsoever.
He's the governor of North Dakota, and he's apparently moderate. So they think, oh, he could, he's sort of moderate on abortion.
Uh-huh.
But he seems kind of old.
That'll help us sell a nationwide abortion ban.
A lot of people like this guy. I don't get it. But as you can see, he's now trading in second place.
He's trading at 17 cents between J.D. Vance and Tim Scott. Has he shown absolute humiliating deference to Trump? Because that's the number one most important quality for his VP pick.
I wouldn't say it's completely humiliating, he's gotten on there and they said, was the election stolen? And he has said it was rigged. But then he sort of explains in a roundabout way that rigged means that they allowed people to vote by mail.
The oldest trick in the book.
So he doesn't exactly say that it was rigged. So in that sense, I think he really needs to come out and say it's totally rigged and stolen in order to really be on Trump's side. Noam is at 3 cents, and I can't believe she's still at 3 cents, because even on conservative media, on Fox News, on what are the others, News Nation Now?
And there's OAN.
OAN. All of these, they have not treated her well since this thing.
She really got burned by everybody. It wasn't just the liberal media that turned their back on her.
Right. Then she went on Face the Nation, and apparently in her book she says that she met Kim Jong-un, and she didn't.
Yeah.
Did you see that?
Yeah, I listened to that interview multiple times. The host is like, so did you meet Kim Jong-un? She's like, well, once that passage was brought to my attention, then we changed it. And the lady's like, so you didn't meet Kim Jong-un? And she's like, I'm not going to get into every single foreign leader I've ever met.
Right. But what was – so how was that in there? Was it just another Asian leader and she got them confused? I would want to know how that happened.
Right. Because Kim Jong-un, when it comes to world leaders, like, he's really famous.
Yeah.
He's like the – he's Rocket Man.
Yeah. Infamous.
He's the guy who runs a whole – he runs a whole dictatorship, and he has a very distinct vibe. And if you're meeting him, like, not many people have
met – anytime someone meets him, it makes big news. You know, when Dennis Rodman met with him.
It's like meeting J.D. Salinger or something. Like, not a lot of people get an audience. Not a lot of Westerners get an audience with Kim Jong-un.
Right.
And the point in the book is she's like, I guess he didn't know that I've stared down a lot of little tyrants because I used to be a Sunday school teacher. It's like one of these types of things where it's like corn pone, homespun, badass, Sarah Palin style, mama bear.
Toastmasters.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, of course she didn't meet him. In what scenario is Kristi Noem meeting Kim Jong-un? At the International Dog Shooting Competition?
Yeah, we don't need to go there.
I don't think it was that she met another Asian leader and mistook that leader for Kim Jong-un.
She just lied.
Yeah, I think she just made it up.
And then said, let's publish it.
Yes.
And no one will know.
Yes.
How does that happen?
John.
You lie that you met Kim Jong-un to the local Rotary Club.
Yeah. And it goes over well. And okay, let's take that as an example.
And then you say,
she speaks to the
let's
local
lie
Rotary
to the
Club.
Entire nation. No one will find
this,
out.
This story works really well. Let's put it in the book.
Every time we say something wrong on this podcast, we get shot down by like 25 listeners that come in and explain that we're completely wrong.
Oh, don't exaggerate. Most people are barely listening to this podcast. They're not actively listening. They're like doing
but
dishes.
But I'm just saying,
like,
if we say something that is wrong.
Uh-huh. Say something that's wrong right now and see if anyone corrects it. I guarantee people are skimming this podcast at like 2.5x speed.
No, I'm not going to say, I don't. But people pick up on stuff.
In 1496, Columbus sailed the ocean blue. Watch, no one will correct that.
That's right.
And we all know it's wrong because it doesn't even rhyme. So she probably told the story at a Rotary Club and her people were like, that went really well. We got to put that in the book. She's
and
like,
maybe the people didn't know that it wasn't true.
Right, right.
And then they published it and then she didn't read her book ahead of time.
Right.
So that's an example of how
she did
happened.
Technically read the audiobook into a microphone and say that she had met Kim Jong-un. And at that point, she's probably like, yeah, that's why people are jumping on her when she says, as soon as we caught the error, we're going to correct the book. It's like, well, you already recorded the audiobook. You say it in your own voice.
Okay, that's not great.
Well, of course it's not great, but does it matter?
Yeah, it matters because she's...
You think it matters relative to cricket? Cricket is the only thing that matters. At this point, the Kim Jong-un thing is just an extra burden she has to carry because she's already so heavy laden with the death of cricket. You know what I mean?
No, I think she can spin cricket. She can spin cricket.
Oh, and, yeah, she's going to spin cricket.
Well, she's trying. She's saying that, you know, cricket was bad and he was worse than Biden's dog, and Biden's dog probably should have been put down.
I know. Now she's threatening Commander. I don't know if you want to go up against Commander, because that dude seems like a fucking killer, man. Like,
yeah, he's not.
Commander is like the ballsiest thing about Biden. Biden's like, yeah, I'm bringing a fucking monster into this White House. Everybody has to deal with it.
Commander's like, you're not the one.
Right. Imagine if Commander had been at the Capitol on January 6th, just like tearing through protesters, like biting their heads off, ends the day covered in blood, like limping.
Oh my God.
All right, let's not talk about the VP market anymore.
I want to talk about Rubio.
Right. Okay.
So Rubio's name is out there. Apparently, Mr. Trump and Rubio like each other again.
Rubio's at 8 cents.
In Rubio's case, he has a 12th Amendment issue, the favorite son prohibition, which is that you cannot have two candidates on a presidential ticket from the same state. If you remember in 2000, that was the case with George W. Bush and Dick Cheney, and then Dick Cheney
relocated.
Moved his residency to Wyoming, or at least his mailing address. He probably had like a Wyoming cabin or something.
He did it Mark Meadows style.
Exactly. So Rubio would have to do that and would need to leave Florida.
Well, can he still be Florida's senator if he has to leave Florida?
No, he would not be able to do that.
This is not happening. Marco Rubio is not giving up his Senate seat to be Donald Trump's vice president, especially if he has to relocate.
Well, they've asked him and he's not saying no.
It's not going to be Marco Rubio.
Well, he got all the way up to 12 cents, so I was able to buy the no side at 88
today.
Oh,
hell yes.
Pretty good.
Good for you. And I have to say, I don't think it's going to be Tim Scott, which breaks my heart. I think it's going to be Elise Stefanik.
Well, that won't be good for me either.
By process of elimination, I think it's going to be Elise Stefanik.
That's what the listeners on Discord, or at least one of our listeners on Discord, thinks.
I think it's got to be a woman, and I think she is proving over and over again that she will say anything to appease His Majesty Donald Trump.
And she's laying kind of low.
She's not talking about any controversial things involving pets.
So in her case, I will make $76. So I need to sell some of my no shares on her just to
lighten your load a little.
Yeah, just trying to spread it out, you know?
How does it feel to be back actively trading on Predictit and monitoring the prices and stuff?
It feels pretty fun, actually.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. I've just enjoyed the trading aspect of it. In the old days, I would trade in blocks of 100 shares, and now I'm just doing like one share, 26 shares, just like lots of small shares all across the board. So the trading is kind of going on all the time.
Are you doing that because you're more conservative with your money these days?
No, I'm just playing with the negative risk aspect of it. So trying to keep it even all across the board.
Right. Okay.
Just to see how high I can get that number. Yeah.
All right.
But I've tried trading in the other markets. I tried trading in the electoral college market, and there's no volume. There's no volume in the presidential market either. This is just where the action is.
A shell of its former self, predictit.org. Is something happening with the CFTC?
Yeah, the CFTC is holding an open meeting for the public on Friday where they are going to discuss events contracts. So if anyone is interested in that, you can go to the cftc.gov website. And this Friday, you can listen in, 10 a.m.
What could happen as a result of this meeting? What should we be listening for?
I don't know. That's the thing. There's hardly any Predictit community. In the past, you would be able to listen to what other experts are saying and help form an opinion. But I think Predictit is just a ghost town right now. I think a lot of people are like, whatever, they just assume it's going to end. So I don't really know what's going to happen.
Could the CFTC say, you know what, we were too strict. You Predictit markets out there, go and have yourself some fun. And then the next morning we wake up and there's like 150 new markets?
No, because that makes the CFTC's job much harder. It's just hard to regulate. It was hard enough and a pain in the ass just to deal with Predicted. So I think the thinking is that they're just, they want to get rid of it across the board, including their exception for Predicted. They just don't want to deal with it. Predicted is a problem because all of these other players are like, Predicted's doing it. Why can't we? And I think they're thinking, that's a good point.
So it could be the case that after this meeting or at some point between now and the election, Predicted truly absolutely shuts down, at least in a way where you can access it via an American ISP or whatever it is?
I guess it could be. But again, users of Predicted have been willing to sue.
Those mighty heroes.
Yeah.
Laying it all on the line for the rest of us.
That's right.
I'll fall on my sword for Predicted.
Man, that is going to suck if I get right back into Predicted.
Right when you get back into like negative risk and then they yank it all away from you.
Yeah.
Then we got to go to one of these foreign ones, one of these foreign trading things where you need a bunch of Ethereum to do it, like Kashi or whatever. You won't catch me within 100 miles of such a website.
I really hope they let them go through the election because I need, you know, to make a lot of money on this election.
Hmm. We all do.
Yeah.
We all need to make a lot of money on this election. North Carolina limelight update, folks. North Carolina always in the news, always first in our hearts. Mark Meadows, former representative from North Carolina, former Donald Trump chief of staff, indicted again in Arizona on April 24th. Mark Meadows also facing charges in Georgia. And he's an unindicted co-conspirator in Michigan. Mark Meadows has an uphill battle to climb. Is that how you say that? That was cool. Mark Meadows has an uphill battle to climb. And we wish him the best because although he wasn't born in North Carolina, he truly came into his own in North Carolina. We always think about him with affection because according to the testimony of his co-workers on the morning of January 6th, he got so checked out during the riot and would just lie on the sofa looking at his phone. And when someone would ask him to maybe appeal to Trump to stop the violence, he would just like whimper softly or churlishly. So Mark Meadows, I feel you, buddy. I'm right there with you. I'm right there with you, Mark Meadows. Good luck with your latest round of indictments for trying to steal the election. John, President Biden was in Charlotte and a bunch of cops were at UNC. What's going on the UNC campus protest beat?
So, I think people may have seen that the new chancellor at UNC came out on Tuesday, I believe it was. It was when we were recording and said that he was going to clear the quad of the demonstrators who were demonstrating on behalf of the Palestinian cause. And it basically got kind of nasty, and the demonstrators got roughed up. There's pictures of demonstrators getting their hair pulled by the cops, and the chancellor Lee Roberts just standing there watching it. It was pretty gross stuff. The Orange County Sheriff Department, UNC Police, and North Carolina State Troopers were there.
Did local fraternities partner with the cops in order to preserve safety on campus?
It certainly looked like that. It certainly looked like they were being just as provocative as the protesters.
Well, now I find that hard to believe. Fraternity brothers usually represent the best of us.
There was a lot of shoving between them, and they did protect the flag.
Mm. Wait, was it you? I heard a story about some Palestinian protesters took down an American flag and replaced it with a Palestinian flag. And then some heroic frat brothers returned the American. This is like Iwo Jima all over again. Returned the American flag to its proper place. Was that actually a UNC story? I thought that happened somewhere else.
No, that was on UNC campus. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. That's incredible. I didn't realize that.
Yeah. Yeah. Apparently, it was a number of fraternity guys that did it.
Wow. So this means that UNC is once again an American university and is not being run by Hamas. Is that correct?
Right. It had been and the entire campus was in danger.
Right.
But safety has been restored.
Thank God.
Yeah. The chancellor stood on the steps of South Building and said that as long as he is chancellor.
Oh, I know the second half of this phrase is going to be so good.
That American flag will stay right there. It was profound. It was not at all political grandstanding. Do you think that was the first time that protesters have done something like that, like taking a flag down or put up a controversial banner on a flagpole or something like that?
No.
I mean, because they acted like it was the greatest, like this was beyond.
Truly unprecedented.
The pale.
Right.
We have never, like, you know, you see people who are protesting, holding American flags upside down. You see people burning flags, stuff like that. They don't generally shut down an entire university, cancel class.
Right.
Call in hundreds of cops.
Where did they find all these cops?
So they were UNC system cops, which means they could have come from NC State. They could have come from North Carolina Central. Obviously, the UNC cops as well. But the Chapel Hill Police Department and the Carrboro Police Department were like, nah, no, we're not going to do that. That's politically not great for us.
Right.
We have to live in this town.
Where was the flag?
It's right on Polk Place, which is the center of the quad, you know, in between South Building and Wilson Library.
Got it.
Just a flag.
What's the situation on campus now? Has everything been broken up and students have dispersed and order is restored? And
no, I think demonstrations are still going on.
Israel invaded Rafah last night, so maybe there'll be new atrocities that they'll protest.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to stop protesting. And I, you know, just judging by what you were watching on TV, it looked like absolute chaos. And I think it was in that little 50 by 50 area around the flagpole.
Cops bring chaos.
I mean, yeah, that's pretty much what happens.
It's a great way to de-escalate a situation is to unleash a bunch of cops.
Yeah. So I asked people on campus what the mood was like, you know, the next day.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty much everyone said, what are you talking about? Like, it just wasn't a thing on campus.
It played bigger to the national media than it did to people who are actually living around the UNC campus?
Right, which probably served the agenda of the chancellor and the demonstrators as well. So,
has there been any media attention about college protests recently?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, last week when we talked about it, I was like, yeah, you know, if these guys are going to break the law and take over a particular building, then, you know, of course they're going to get arrested. That's just part of the...
Right.
That's part of what happens. And I would be frustrated if I were a student and they were disrupting. But, you know, as long as you're willing to pay the price. But the idea of the cops coming in and manhandling them because they pulled this prank of pulling down the American flag.
Right.
As offensive as that may be.
Right.
It's certainly not dangerous. And
if them, Duke students had come over and replaced the American flag with a Duke flag as a prank, they would not have unleashed so many cops.
I don't think so.
It's the dangerous ideas behind the flag. John, flags are symbols. I don't know if you're aware of that, but a flag actually represents an idea or an ideal. And that's why people get so exercised when they see their beloved American flag burned or mutilated.
Yeah. It's just strange to see a university chancellor out there defending the – like if the flag got pulled down at the White House by some demonstrators, I'd almost be okay if Biden came out and was like, as long as I'm president, this flag is going to fly here. It's the White House.
Right.
Like their flags flying everywhere. And
that's
just
true. There's
not,
a lot of flags.
They're just everywhere. It's just
you can't say America doesn't have a lot of American flags flapping every which way all over the fucking place. That's true.
Yeah, and they didn't pull down the flag at Fort Bragg, Fort Liberty. It's like
although
they
that would
pulled
be baller.
Down a flag on, you know, basically a left-wing campus. Of course that's where the flag got pulled down. Why would you be so emotional about it?
Well,
I mean, and I think it played really well. You know, the News and Observer the next day, there was an op-ed in there from Republican leaders saying, we need to make the interim chancellor the full-time permanent chancellor.
Because who else is going to protect our flags on campus?
Yeah. Did you know he's Cokie Roberts' son?
That doesn't surprise me, man.
Is she bad?
Well, I don't know. Wait, Cokie Roberts from – she's on National Public Radio, right?
Yeah, like ABC, you know, I think for years.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah, I think it's just a bunch. I think there are a lot of people in positions of power and authority who are just kind of like, I don't know, mediocre, I guess I would say. Does that make sense? I don't want to be super controversial, but I do think that a lot of people who are given positions of authority are actually probably not that – are not spectacular people. Can I say that? That's okay to say, right? I'm going to say it. I don't care if it's okay to say. I'm going to say it. It doesn't surprise me that Cokie Roberts' son is kind of – cynical and mediocre. How about that? Can I say that?
Sure. I mean, I think, yeah.
I never know what I'm allowed to say and what I'm not allowed to say. You know, it's
oh,
like.
Oh, because of cancel culture and stuff.
Jerry Seinfeld made this new movie about Pop-Tarts, and now he's going around saying that you can't. Comedy's been killed because of the woke mind, and kids are too PC now, and they won't laugh at his jokes, you know?
Did Jerry Seinfeld used to have a lot of edgy comedy?
Yeah. Where he used to be really edgy comedy. Yeah.
Yeah.
But sometimes I feel that way. Like, I don't want to get canceled by saying that Cokie Roberts' son might not be the best chancellor in UNC's history. But I'm afraid that if I just come out and say that, that all these people who have been indoctrinated by the woke mind virus are going to cancel me. But then on the other hand, you know, I love truth tellers and I've always admired people who aren't afraid to speak their truth. And so I kind of feel like I should take a stand.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? And just say it. You know what? Fuck it. I'm going to say it. It doesn't surprise me. Friends, I have an announcement to make, and I don't care what the consequences are. It doesn't surprise me to learn that Cokie Roberts' son is a mediocre chancellor of the UNC education system. How about that? I've done it now. I feel unburdened. That was good. I'm like the guy in Baby Reindeer after he does his big monologue. I can live again. I can breathe again. All right, moving on. John? We have not yet received a cicada recording from an Illinois listener, and that's killing me. But at least we have a cicada recording from a North Carolina co-host.
Yeah. No, I've been able to get my nephew, Ben, sent me his recording as well. I have my own recording, and our friend Mike probably had the loudest recording of everyone.
He has a sound decibel reader for other reasons, personal reasons.
Yes. So I told you off the air, when we got off the air, off the broadcast last week, I said, I'm going to buy a decibel meter. And I told Mike and he was like, oh, I already have one of those. So
he sent us a video of him recording cicadas. It was up over 70 decibels. Is that loud?
Yeah, that's loud. You know, that's urban noise, traffic.
I have so much cicada envy right now.
Yeah. That's definitely loud. Vacuum cleaner, I think, is 70 decibels. I recorded mine here today using, because I haven't received my decibel meter, and I realized that they just have these for free as iPhone apps.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. And I recorded here and got 65. So,
shall we give it a listen?
Sure.
Thank you.
And we're back. So what's it like hearing all the cicadas live? I really have FOMO. This is like my lunar, my solar eclipse. I wish I was down there. I kind of biffed it.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
It never stops. It feels like a neighbor's house alarm is going off all the time.
And it's just bugs. Bugs from underground.
Yeah. And you can't really see, at least I can't see them. I guess they're just in the trees and the noise is all around you. It stops at night. And the other night we had about 2 inches of rain, just heavy downpour. So I worried that they were all going to get wiped out. But apparently the water does not affect them unless there's really heavy wind. Because you know wind, it's bad. But there wasn't any wind. So the next day they were louder than ever. It just seems like they get louder every day.
They're finding their voice. They're speaking their truth. And with each day, they get more and more powerful.
Yeah. So the CDC says that within 3 feet of an infested tree, they can be up to 90 decibels.
Oh!
So I'm hoping to get a recording of that at some point.
When I think about my favorite animals over the years, you know, I went through a dolphin phase. I went through a manatee phase. Boy, when I was a kid, I got so obsessed with the California condor, the poor, once endangered California condor. And then as a child, I wrote a report on slugs, and then I had my slugs moment. And then as I entered middle age, of course, I couldn't help but be captivated by the Greenland shark. You know about the Greenland shark, the oldest animal?
Yeah.
Greenland sharks spend their entire life in really, really cold water in utter darkness.
Aren't they like 800 years old?
Yeah, they can live to be like over like 500 years old. And they just swim around and they have these worms that attach to their eyes parasitically so that they can't see. But there's nothing to see anyway because the water's so dark. And all they do is swim around for like 500-600 years. Oh, my God. I mean, talk about squad goals. But I realized that I might have to add the cicada to my list of favorite animals.
Right.
Often overlooked. In my life. But boy, do I love the sound. And I love the brand identity of the cicada. We had a listener write in an extremely long and detailed email about cicadas. I want to thank Neil for his cicada dispatch. I don't think we have time to read the whole thing. But he was like, yeah, they're straight up living underground. It's not like they're little seeds that pop up and then they turn into animals. They're living underground.
Is that what he said?
Hold on. Let me check. Hold on. Everybody just hold on 1 second. Hold on.
They cannot be living underground.
Hold on. Hold on.
They're seeds at some point. Because these new guys are going to lay eggs or whatever.
Periodical cicadas indeed are living, growing, and in a limited capacity moving during their 13 or 17-year underground sojourns. At the end of each emergence, females lay their eggs in twigs, and the eggs take only about 6 to 10 weeks to develop and hatch. The young worm-like cicada larvae, also called poetically nymphs, then drop to the ground, burrow down, and attach themselves to a tree root, and then spend over a decade slowly growing and counting the years. It is thought that they are sensitive to seasonal changes in sap flow within the roots they are attached to, so even deep underground, they can track the passage of time. Even a few feet down in the soil, they may also be able to sense seasonal changes in light and temperature. They grow and shed their skin 5 times while underground, and when the time is right, they emerge and shed their skin 1 last time to assume their adult form. I'm calling it cicada, my new favorite animal. I can't believe this shit is real.
My question is, in a lab setting, would it be possible to trick a cicada?
Hell no.
Into coming up
early? No. I guarantee.
There's no way.
I bet their sap flow sensitivity radar is off the charts. I bet they are. I bet you can't. I mean, a human wishes they could trick a cicada. And be like, hurry up, don't take 17 years. Cicada's like, you know what? I'll come out when I'm good and goddamn ready. I got to track this sap flow for seasonal fluctuations. Don't trick me into coming out too early. I come out in a prime number year, right? 17 years, 13 years. prime numbers.
The other thing that he mentioned was that this particular brood, Brood 19, the Great Southern Brood, is a mix of a bunch of different cicada species.
I'm telling you, these cicadas,
all in sync.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know that. I thought they were the same.
In their wisdom and their love for prime numbers, the cicadas have emerged at a wonderfully appropriate time with all these campus uprisings and protests going on. These students, some of whom might be about as old as the cicadas, let's say 17 years. Well, maybe I'm pushing the analogy. Some of these students have been burrowing and burrowing underground, and now they are emerging, right? They're shedding their carapace or whatever, and now they're singing their song. Good for them.
Right.
Take inspiration from these cicadas.
They're emerging from tunnels.
Yeah, they bide their time until the time is right, and then they come out. Cicadas are an apt mascot for what we're experiencing on these college campuses over the past few weeks. And who knows what'll happen? Maybe people will be singing the song of the cicadas in case the Democratic convention is disrupted because Biden is still funneling money and weapons to Benjamin Netanyahu, who will have utterly destroyed Rafah by the time of the convention.
So there is a lawsuit right now over the DNC demonstrators wanting to be able to demonstrate right outside of the arena.
Right.
Hopefully that doesn't happen. I'm rooting for a free speech zone at O'Hare.
You want a free speech? You want to put all the cicadas in a box in a free speech?
No, zone? I just think PR wise it's going to look bad.
John, we are entering the month of May. In fact, we've already dipped our toes into the month. I think the second half of this year is going to be rough and tumble. That's my prediction. I think it's going to be a rough and tumble summer and fall in 2024.
Yeah, this is when people finally start paying attention.
Yep. I think it's going to get really gnarly, with or without my beloved cicadas. Oh my gosh, these cicadas. Oh.
When are they going to stop?
I hope they never stop. I hope they get louder and louder and louder. I love it. When you keep sending me these videos and you're like, I think they're louder today than they were yesterday. I'm pumping my fists so hard, I'm rooting them on.
But now that I have, you know, a way to record the decibels, I'll actually know if they're louder.
Now you'll be able to truly quantify it.
Right, right.
Oh boy. The majesty of nature cannot be underestimated. You know what? I'll stick my neck out once again. And I don't care if someone tries to cancel me for this. The majesty of nature cannot be underestimated.
Okay. Hand poured in the shadow of the Olympic Mountains, Mount Eleanor candles will help curate the perfect spring vibe. The candles are made with premium wax and the scents are herbal, woody, and floral.
We have a listener who makes candles. God damn, talk about signs and wonders. Mount Eleanor candles, and this listener sent us some free candles.
Now, David got the Baker and Sisters scent.
Yeah, I got two candles. I thought the Baker candle was just going to be all yeasty. Like, I thought it was supposed to smell like bread, but these are named for peaks in the Pacific Northwest.
Okay. And I got Hood and Helens, as you can imagine.
Wait, as in Mount St. Helens?
Mount St. Helens.
That's bold to name a candle after a volcano.
The scent is so good. I can't decide which one I like better. Sorry, hang on.
I tried both my candles. They both smell really good.
The Helens is a little bit sweeter than the Hood. The Hood feels a little more masculine.
Yeah.
If there's such a thing.
Mount Eleanor was created to share the love of the outdoors and find scents to match. In addition,
they donate a portion of each sale to organizations that support tribal sovereignty and sustainability in the Pacific Northwest. A great gift for the moms, dads, and grads in your lives. Use code EPM25 to get 25% off at checkout. The website is MountEleanor.com. It is MT, the abbreviation for Mount, and Eleanor is spelled E-L-L-I-N-O-R. MountEleanor.com.
Use code EPM25 to get 25% off at checkout.
I love them.
Where are we at time-wise?
I don't know, but can we talk about Drake? Can you explain that?
John has asked me to explain the Drake thing. John, what do you know about what's going on with Drake, the famous Canadian rapper?
he's beefing with Kendrick Lamar, who is another rapper. And I guess he's being accused of pedophilia or just liking younger women.
You know, I was thinking about this, John, when I was trying to place this rap beef in the context of other legendary rap beefs over the years. The most famous one, of course, is Biggie Smalls versus Tupac, right? East Coast versus West Coast. Mm-hmm. But do you remember that one of our first interactions as kids was about a rap beef?
Of course, yeah.
Do you remember who the rappers were?
Of course.
Because their rap names, they sound pretty modern these days.
Schoolie D.
Yep.
And Spoonie G.
Schoolie D versus Spoonie G. So to the youth who listen to this podcast, you know every damn rapper these days is Lil something, Lil Yachty, Lil this or that, right? Mm-hmm. Lil Uzi Vert. Back when John and I were your age, everybody's rap name was blankety hyphen consonant. There was also Steady B, who had the minor hit, Your Mother. I still have that record. And of course, I have Schoolie D's first record. That's probably worth something these days. That's probably still
Schoolie D was a bigger star than Spoonie G.
Well, Schoolie D, yeah. I mean, he was the first gangster rapper, some people say. He was Philadelphia-based. Well, we talked about him a couple weeks ago because he sampled Led Zeppelin. But anyway, I got into Schoolie D for some reason, and then John got into Spoonie G, and they were having like a back and forth, and it was like that was – do you remember that? I think we were in seventh grade.
Yeah, and by got into grade. It, I just happened to have a Spoonie G album, and then
– it's like when you pick a sports team or something, and then you're defined by that rivalry.
Yeah.
I can't remember what they were fighting about, probably just who was the better rapper. But yeah, the Kendrick Lamar and Drake thing is more distressing because it's allegations of like – all kinds of truly dark stuff, and they seem to truly hate each other. And I was keeping up with it for a while, but then they both started, like, Kendrick Lamar released, like, three diss tracks in, like, 48 hours because he had a mole. Apparently, he had a mole within Drake's inner circle who was feeding him intel on what Drake's next song would be about.
And I'm hearing that Drake actually spilled that info on purpose.
Right. It was false info to, I mean, this is like the Bureau. You know, I love that spy show, The Bureau. This is like if the Bureau was combined with hip hop. I should be liking it more than I am, but I just find it a little distressing at this point. And also, it's like I'm already trying to read fucking Cryptonomicon and I'm dragging ass trying to read this book. I'm like, I've only read like 20 pages since we last spoke. The last thing I need now is to get caught up in a never ending rap battle where each person is releasing 8 minute songs at a time, you know?
Do you get any sense of who's winning?
Kendrick Lamar is winning.
Yeah, Drake's losing because Drake is kind of corny.
I think it's partly that, yeah.
Somebody said that the reason Drake is losing and everyone's turning on him is because his music is just bad now. So sort of like a coach, you know, a coach who has bad behavior. They can pretty much get away with anything. If as long as they're winning.
Right. Or a movie executive.
The second they start putting out bad movies,
everybody comes for them. It's safe now.
So I don't know enough about rap to know if Drake is putting out bad music. But that's what people are saying is the reason.
What's your favorite Drake song of all time?
I have no idea. I couldn't name a Drake song.
What's your favorite Kendrick Lamar song of all time? What's your favorite Spoonie G song of all time? Can your mind go that far back?
I don't think so.
Oh, John, I just remembered. We're really riffing. Oh, we should stop. We're running late. Folks, I just read a whole book about the Chapel Hill music scene of the 90s. I can't believe this book existed. Thank you to whoever told John about it.
Our buddy Austin.
I bought this book immediately and read it. I read this book in 48 hours. I can't believe this book was so dialed into my interests. It's called A Really Strange and Wonderful Time is the name of the book. Tom Maxwell, who was in Squirrel Nut Zippers, is the author.
The guy who owns Julian Carr's old house.
What's that?
He used to own Julian Carr's old house in Hillsboro, which he claimed was haunted.
Right, yeah. He was one of the guys in Squirrel Nut Zippers and some other local bands, and he wrote a definitive history. Let's see what the years are. It's called... God, why don't you load? Oh, you know what? It's the full title is A Really Strange and Wonderful Time, The Chapel Hill Music Scene, 1989 to 1999. Published by Hachette, who also published Christy Gnome's book, Taking Back America, How We Fight for Our Freedom and Take a Stand, or whatever the subtitle is. Which book do you suppose is more up my alley? Christy Noem's book or Tom Maxwell's book? Chet, I'm only paying you for one of them. Guess which one it was. If you're interested in Chapel Hill Rock, this is, I will say, exhaustive, truly exhaustive. It might have been even a little exhaustive for me. But once I hit the two full pages where all he did was describe the physical appearance of the members of Metal Flake Mother, fella, I was so locked into this book. And you know what I realized? The two heroes of that whole scene, one is Frank Heath, who owned the Cat's Cradle, and the other one, John, was Caleb Southern. Caleb Southern really carried that scene on his back. Caleb Southern was a local engineer who recorded a lot of bands, and he also ran live sound at the Cat's Cradle. And he also, amazingly, recorded our high school band and then some other bands of mine. And he was a great guy. I think we've mentioned him recently. He passed away a couple years ago at, you know, he was only like 4 or 5 years older than us. But he really made that scene.
Yeah, he was with Ben Folds 5 for a while, right? Like exclusively doing their albums.
Yeah, they called him the fourth member of Ben Folds 5 because he worked on a lot of their records.
And then he went and became like an engineer at Georgia Tech, and then, you know, solved some traffic problem in Durham County.
Yeah, he was like one of those people who just was a like
a
had
very
such an aptitude,
nice guy.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, so it was nice to read about how important Caleb Southern was to that really exciting moment of creativity, and to know that we had our brief interactions with him. And
we had a song dedicated to him.
We do?
Caleb's Death Mix.
Oh, right. That was the final track we tracked on our high school band. Right. Because we were running out of tape. It was recorded to analog tape at his studio.
That's right. So he just did all of these crazy loops and everything.
Yeah, that's right. We had some fun. You want to know something really crazy? At some point in college, this was during, speaking of college protests, let me tell you about, boy, I was planning some direct action that was going to bring the war machine to its knees, John. This was during Operation, we were talking about the other week.
Desert Shield.
Right. Operation Desert Shield.
And then it was Desert Storm.
Right. Desert Storm. I was home from college and I called Caleb and I was like, I really wanted to do this. I wanted to re-record. This might have been the last time I saw Caleb. You know. I don't know why this is so funny to me now, but do you know that song Eve of Destruction? It was a Vietnam song. And you tell me over and over and over again, we're on the eve of destruction. It was like a one-hit wonder for some singer-songwriter, and it was about Vietnam. I called Caleb and I was like, man, you know what's going on with this Iraq war. We got to record a new version of Eve of Destruction. And Caleb was so good-natured. I don't even know if I had any money or something. He was like, okay, yeah, come over to the studio. I remember going over to his studio one Sunday afternoon to start working on recording our own version of Eve of Destruction for the new Vietnam, which was the Iraq War.
Was this Lloyd Street Studios?
Yeah, I think it was when he was working at Lloyd Street Studios. Although he did wind up having his own studio. I think this predated that.
Is this it?
The eastern world, it is exploding, violence flaring,
right?
Bullets loaded.
Yeah, that's it. Eve of Destruction.
You're old enough to kill,
but not for voting. So I was like, we got to update this song, man. He was like, all right, come on over to the studio. So I went over to the studio, and I didn't know guitar chords or anything. Like, I couldn't recreate this song. All I remember us doing is taking a soda, a soda cup from like McDonald's that had a straw in it. And you know, when you move the straw up and down, it goes, hee-haw, hee-haw, hee-haw. I remember us using that as like the, that was going to be like the rhythm track. Like what? I was trying to stop a war with a fucking soda song made out of a soda straw. Like what?
Do you still have this? It's got to be somewhere.
I don't know. I don't think we ever got around to actually tracking anything. I don't think we ever recorded anything. I think this was just like a wood, like what do they call it? Wood shedding.
Okay.
Caleb was like, yeah, come on over. We'll start working on this song. I think I wanted it to be like a dance version so it could be played at the club. I don't know. Anyway, it was lovely to read about Caleb in this book. The book, again, A Really Strange and Wonderful Time. The Chapel Hill Music Scene, 1989 to 1999. Boy, oh boy.
All right.
I think that's quite enough for 1 week.
Election Profit Makers is an independent production. Thanks to our Patreon supporters. We welcome your support on Patreon at patreon.com/electionprofitmakers. And if you sign up for Patreon, you'll receive some wonderful EPM stickers in the mail. You'll also get an invite code to our private Discord. Rate and review us on all podcast platforms, please. It will help us increase our audience during the election season. Send your election prediction questions, skyline requests, and bird recordings to contact@electionprofitmakers.com. And if you want to advertise with us, email contact@electionprofitmakers.com.
Goodbye. We'll talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
Suck MC, get off my saddle. Before I get mad and battle you and make you look like a fool, they'll say to me, how can you be so cruel? But I'm not cruel, I'm just tired. Biting off me as though I've been wired. Word for word, rhyme for rhyme, claiming it's yours when you know it's mine. Smiling in my face at the same time stabbing. Me in the back of this, your girl, I'm having. Every night, if not every day. So don't start rapping or she's gonna say that's my style.